Welcome to the Missouri 811 and Kansas 811 podcast. I'm Nick Reza with Missouri 811, and this is my good friend Art York from Kansas 811, and he's here to tell you a little bit about what's going to be on these podcasts.
Great. Thanks, Nick. Really looking forward to these podcasts. Nick and I decided a couple months ago that we wanted to put a podcast together, invite some friends, some clients, things like that from across the industries, from utilities, locators, excavators, and we want to talk about what's going on in the field. We thought it would be a great opportunity to hear some of the success stories out there, maybe some issues they're having. We plan on talking about a little bit of everything from what we've done in the past. Nick and I both have a background in utilities and locating, and now we've both been in the one-call industry for the last 8-10 years. Worked together on a lot of projects, so we wanted to partner up and do this, and so welcome. I hope you enjoyed the show. Please let us know if you're ever interested in being part of our podcast. Reach out to Nick or I. We'd love to have you on. But we really like to have a lot of good guests with a lot of good knowledge out there, so you can take something away from it. Also have a little bit of fun while we're doing our podcast. So thanks. Sit down, relax, enjoy the show, and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Arch.
All right. Well, welcome to the first Kansas 811 and Missouri 811 podcast. Thanks for joining today. We have a special guest with us, Jeff Trowbridge. We'll let you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm Jeff Trowbridge. I work for Subsurface Solutions. I've been in the industry for 19 years in the Kansas City area, Kansas City market. Run all of Kansas and Missouri for the company I work for now, and we represent radio detection locators and things like that. But a lot of what we do is help folks with training and things like that on locators and understanding how locators work and why they do, why they don't.
Awesome. Great. Well, my name's Art York. I'm with Kansas 811. I'm a damage prevention manager based out of the Kansas City area. Work all across the state of Kansas, but we do have a lot of initiatives that we partner with Missouri 811 on, and Nick?
Yeah, I'm Nick Reza. I'm Education and Marketing Manager for Missouri 811. Okay. So me and Art's been talking about this for a while. Like, we ought to get a podcast going and get a lot of industry leaders in here. We got a lot of stakeholders in this industry. So it's like, yeah, it'd be cool if we kind of got a podcast going, bring these people in, share their experiences and stuff like that. So it's cool to have you on our first one.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're looking forward to, you know, creating a bunch of these, get them dropped out there, hopefully provide some good education for people in the field, but also just answer some questions. So, you know, about what we do as far as a one-call agency, kind of what Jeff does. We're going to talk about locate industry quite a bit today. But as far as the one-call industry, just a quick overview. Both Missouri 811 and Kansas 811, we're a nonprofit organization. We report up to a board of directors. There are several employees in each state that go out, do the education, things like that. But we also manage the call center. We have a company called OCC, One Call Concepts, that actually handles our call centers for both of our states. They're a great company to work with, but they're actually the people that are receiving those tickets in those dig requests. So when someone clicks or calls before they dig, they map that ticket out. They process it, they identify exactly where the dig site's going to be, what member utilities are on that dig site, and they transmit that ticket out. To add to that, just as a you know, common thing we deal with all the time, Nick and I and our counterparts, we get calls weekly about why didn't you come out and mark the utility, or why did you come put paint in my yard?
They all think that we're the ones.
Everyone thinks, so, you know, sometimes, you know, the general public thinks that we're the ones that actually are doing the painting.
That you're the provider.
So sure. just so you know, we don't actually do any of the locates. We send that transmission out to the utilities. Utilities are responsible for doing the locates. So help us spread the word. So when you're talking to your friends and your family, when they say, oh, the one call guys didn't come out and do their job, or they painted my yard, make sure you, you know, help us spread
it's
that
funny
message.
You say that. I still have my family call me and friends that go, hey, can you can you come out and do a locate for me? I'm like, I don't do that.
But, I still get those calls of if somebody sees a sticker, an 811 sticker on a truck, they automatically think that's one of our employees. So I get the bad driving calls. It's like, no, that's not us. In Kansas, there's only three of us, and I think in Missouri, there's only seven. So anyway, that kind of covers that as far as we don't actually do that. So help us spread that message.
And one thing, having Jeff in the room, about 20 years ago, I started a water department, and after about a year, the locator quit, just left. My experience to get into locating was, here's the bag, go out and do this. So how important is it? I mean, how hard of a job is it for a locator? I mean, we know in this room we've got a lot of locating experience, but explain to everybody out there, what does it take to find these underground lines, and what difficulties do they
have? Oh, wow. Great question. Where to begin? Number one, it takes the right mindset. You know, that's a big thing, and I'll get into that here later on. But the proper training, the right equipment, some experience. So it's a difficult industry to break into because a lot of folks maybe haven't ever dealt with underground utilities, which was my experience 19 years ago. I had not worked in any kind of capacity with utilities. So even though my trainer did a good job, he stopped every 30 minutes and says, anyone have any questions? We didn't have any questions. I mean, we don't even know what we're supposed to – what's really going on here, right? So you're kind of learning that part. So you almost need, like, some field experience and some exposure to it, and then training after the training and all that kind of thing to really get a good foundation and stuff going. And then you need constant support from there on out. I mean, great mentors and stuff usually make most of us very successful in this industry, where you've got someone above you that's been there and done that. It's really shared knowledge is kind of passed on, which is a lot of what we do. And when I'm out, you know, day in, day out and all this stuff, traveling around these states, providing training, is trying to take, like I said, all those years and all those experiences or stories and things and convey that to folks, get more information to them and kind of help close that gap, because it just takes a long time to get to where you're successful at it. with what you said earlier, Archa, it is a great point. When it comes to putting things together and spreading the message, that's something, I mean, yeah, obviously I'm in sales and all that kind of thing, but really I'm into damage prevention. When I talked about the mindset of a locator and bringing that up, the mindset is if you're here about damage prevention, it's not about closing a ticket or profitability. Like, you're really here to make sure everyone goes home safely at the end of the day, and those that live and work around these utilities have an opportunity to be safe around them. I mean, if that's your goal, I mean, it remains your goal.
Well, the locator's kind of on the front line, right, of a utility company.
Oh, they are. They are the front line.
You talk about damage prevention. I mean, they're the ones that, at the end of the day, they need to be really good at their job.
Yeah, whether they're an in-house locator or whether someone's acting as an agent in some capacity for one of these companies, I mean, they are your front line, and you want them to have the best of the best to be able to go out there and take care and handle their business. But that mindset of, I'm going to make sure that I've got everything I can do in my power to make sure that things are marked and marked correctly, that's enormous. That's huge. And I still have that today, where all I really want to do is help people be better at what they're out there trying to do, which is already a difficult job.
So let's back up just a tad. Obviously, we all know that's kind of where we all started in the industry. I started 30-some years ago, and same deal, painting the ground. Technology has changed tremendously over the last 30 years, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, about some of the different methods that are out there, some of the tools that are available. But let's back up to the beginning of locating. So if you were to talk to a young person on the street and said, here's an opportunity, do you look at that? The way I look at it is that is a career opportunity. That's a trade and a skill that you can learn that no one can take away from you, and you can build a career off of that. Pretty good, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. There are lots and lots of career paths that are available. I tell people, you know, all the time when I'm in front of a group of young folks, which is pretty frequently, that if you really own your locates and you get good at this and hone your skills, there's wild career opportunities that exist for you out there. And I say there is a difference between a person that is a spray and pray person, right?
That's right.
You know,
right.
Hey, the magic box made some magic noise, and I put down paint where I got my tone. And then there's the locator is worth their weight in gold. The locator knows how they're establishing their circuit. A locator knows why they're choosing one frequency over another, what their output level should be, and like you said, what tools and avenues and things are going to apply to different situations to figure out, you know, how to prevent a damage or to get that facility marked. There's a vast difference in that. So if you commit and you really learn this and you invest the time and everything, I remember way back when I got started, it was sun up to sun down. I was running scared that whole first summer.
Sure.
I'm like, okay, but I knew with as many repetitions as I could get, if I could just get my hands on it and have as many touch points as I can, and it will come to me, but I've got to be able to see the big picture. And that's the hard part, is understanding the big picture of how everything works together or is layered on top of one another with grounding and things. There's a lot to learn, but you can, but it's a commitment thing as far as I'm concerned.
So going into that, I mean, I've watched a lot of your locator training classes and stuff like that. Jeff does a lot of those around the state, around Missouri. I know he does a lot around Kansas,
right,
too, helping you out. But I watch you talk about resistance, amperage, grounding, all these things. Is it the same for every utility? I mean, does every utility locate the same when you're talking about gas utilities and phone utilities and all that? I guess my point is, it's an industry where you got to have a lot of knowledge if you're going to locate all these different utilities.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you need a strong knowledge base. The way to really approach underground utility locating is that you've almost got to have like an electrician's mind is kind of what you're applying when you get started. You know, it's not all that, but it's a lot of it. So yes, it would apply to anything that's conductive. We're talking about non-conductive things, which is an issue for a lot of people that are probably going to be watching this podcast, is what do I do about plastic with no tracer wire?
Yeah. Right.
Okay, well, you build a time machine, you go back, you convince your board to, you know, spend a nickel a foot and put that stuff in the ground is a way to go. But there are other, you know, other tools and things, ground penetrating radar and thumpers and stuff and products like that exist. But as far as conductive things go, yes, you're going to deal with resistance and amperage and voltage and Ohm's law is going to be what you're applying to things, and ultimately that's where you're going
to
be.
But you don't have to know that coming in.
No,
you can be trained, and that's kind of where I was going with my part of it, and I definitely want to get into more of the details. But you know, I hope that there's some people out there that will watch this podcast and say, hey, that could be an industry for me. But you don't have to be an electrician to come apply to be a locator.
Right? No, not by any stretch.
You can be brought in. I mean, I know when I started, I didn't know what locating was. And I had some great trainers, and it took a lot of years. And I always like to tell locators or people that I steer towards that industry that it's not for the faint of heart. You got to be willing to work. Like you said earlier, daylight to dark, we all did it. And yeah. I tell a lot of the new people when they get into it, I said, you just got to make it. I said, get in there, learn as much as you can do, and expect that you're going to be busy all summer. But if you get that knowledge, you can really grow with it. So, but to go forward with what you said, you know, all the different utilities. Obviously, we got all the different utilities out there, very congested in the field. The technology will allow you, though, to pinpoint what you need to pinpoint and get it very, very close, right? I mean, you think of all the different utilities in the ground, and like Nick said, do you locate them different? Is it all the same principle, like kind of like what Nick was saying? Or do you have to act different with a gas line versus an electric line?
You will act differently depending upon which facility you might be dealing with, you know, gas versus electric, for example. So electric locating can be very difficult. Particularly when it's just an in-house situation. So if you don't have multiple accounts, let's just start there. If you're someone that all you have to do is mark electrical, but you don't understand the common grounding and things that are going on at these houses, and you're not unbonding the phone and the cable TV and other items like that, so you're basically removing layers off the top of the electric, and then by default, the electric is now more isolated and everything, so you can get a locate on that. That becomes very tough. So until someone's really explained that to you, that yes, you're here to locate electrical, but until you do something about the phone and the cable TV, which are basically part of the same circuit right now, you may run into some issues. So to say you are applying the same principles, by and large, you know, you're putting current on your line, and that movement creates electromagnetic fields you're picking up with the receiver. That part's always true. But based upon what the material is and what it's made of or how it was installed or how it was built, and then also which utility it is can dictate how you will approach that specific one. So they've all got their subtle differences and things, but by and large, it's the same principle.
I think you're bringing up a great point too, as far as the training aspect, because I've seen a lot of small, in Missouri and in Kansas too, we have a lot of smaller municipalities that have, have locators on their own. And it seems like a lot of those folks have been told by someone this is how they're supposed to do it, maybe a boss before them or something like that. And there's a lot of misconceptions out there when you say of the training aspect. I mean, these people really need to have good training and know what they're doing and not necessarily rely on some of their predecessors. Would you agree with that?
100%. Most of the folks I'm in front of were probably in the same situation that you started in years ago. What really happened to you was, if we break it down, someone handed you a locator kit and said, yes, you're gonna locate too as part of your duties. And a lot of the folks that are hired now by municipalities and rural water districts and places of similar type like that, they get the information that their boss or their predecessor knows about it or thinks they know about it, right? And gives you that information with all the best intentions, But it really, for the most part, really underestimates what it takes to be a successful locator and what locating really is and things like that. But to go back to Arch's question earlier and to tie into yours, I had a municipality, middle of Kansas, great folks and everything. And I went in, I did locator training, basically started them from scratch. They just bought our radio detection stuff and all that, and got them going. And it was 3 months later, I'm at a trade show, and this guy, he's just bouncing off the walls, right? He's back and forth and pacing. I'm talking to another customer, and I finally I was like, what's going on? What is it? Like, he's got to get something out. And I'm like, okay. He's like, and I know it's going to be good. And so he says, I got to tell you this. I waited to tell you this. I said, okay, what's up? He said, you came in 3 months ago. You sold us the products, but you did the training. He said, you don't know this. We're having an at-fault damage every other day. He said, now we're 3 months damage-free. He's like, we didn't believe that was possible. My boss didn't believe that was possible. He's like, he wants to talk to you about some other things and stuff we want to do and all that kind of stuff.
Really cool.
He said, but we have totally changed what we even thought we could do with locating based upon that. And that's not to toot my own horn or anything, but it clearly shows like what Arch was bringing up earlier, that do you have to have that mindset? Do you have to be an electrician? Do you have to already know something? No. Do you need someone that can thoroughly and adequately explain to you what is going on and then support that and then deliver the information in a way, but also that you're getting good information?
Absolutely.
You know, so someone like you guys or myself that's been around, you know, long enough and been around the block can actually give you, I can tell you why it's working and not working. And every once in a while, there's going to be a puzzle that I'm even stumped on and stuff, but I can work through it.
Sure.
Because I know I've got enough of a background to figure out what component it is that's not making it happen. But to say you've already got to have it in you or have been through that, no. But is it good for everyone to eventually be in front of a professional trainer and get away from what your boss knew or something like that? The answer is yes. Yeah, you need to have something thorough.
So let's talk just a little bit about challenges you have in the field. So let's say we get someone in, we get them trained up, they're ready to go, we're very confident in their skill level of locating, and you release them out to locate. What are some of the challenges they face? And let me start the first one would be, are there challenges with how things are installed? Does installation originally from a utility impact how it's going to be located from here on out?
Oh,
that's a good question.
But you can't, I can't overstate enough how much that impacts what's going to be possible. Like, for example, I'll give you some quick ones. If you've got a dead-end water main or dead-end gas main, and you just bury the end of a tracer wire out there on that dead end without actually grounding it or adding an anode spike or having some kind of access point out there that we can ground, what makes your current want to run out there to that end? It knows that's not great ground. In fact, lower frequencies are very smart and higher frequencies are a little bit dumber, if you want to use that term. They will explore more of that line, but a lower frequency is going to stay closer to you because you have a ground at least at your equipment.
Right.
So now it doesn't want to go very far. The same would be true in a situation like with traffic signals. You know, traffic signals, your controller box is grounded. The cables leave, they go out to each of the other masts in the horseshoe, and they go up and they feed the lights. But to say those cables are actually grounded at each of those masts would not be accurate. So you end up at a higher frequency, something like 65 kilohertz or something like that. Mm-hmm. So the way that folks are installing things to begin with can greatly impact the way that things go. And one I'll run into is pretty common. That I encourage people to get away from as soon as I find out what's going on. Let's say you've got a system, and it's all steel, cast, ductile iron, something conductive, and you're going out there as a water district or something, and you're dropping in sections of plastic. You're putting in insulators that are breaking up your conductors all over town, right. And at some point, your system's not going to be very locatable. So what we encourage folks to do is if you're going to do that and that's going to be your practice, which is fine, then you do want to run a wire from the conductive side across and get to the conductive side and things like that again. Right. So we're encouraging people all the time, even now, like, excuse me, you have to have a proactive plan
right.
for what makes it locatable. It's not just the wire in the ground that does it or makes that possible. It's the grounding of that wire and things like
so,
that.
Well, that's a great point, though. If you think about it, Nick, we're in this damage prevention industry, we talk about best practices all the time. And I'll be honest with you, I've never, until you started talking about that, I've never really seen an industry best practice for installation for the continuation of locating. Now I see ANSI standards, I see different things when people are burying a product. Mm-hmm. There's certain standards and inspections they have to go through. But I've never been in front of anybody or been in a meeting where it's ever been said, let's install it correctly. So we can locate it correctly.
Well, and like you said, we're all damage prevention people in the room.
Right.
But I mean, I see gas mains that were installed back in the 50s and 60s mm-hmm. that they're still fighting
sure.
having cut lines on to this day.
Right.
That, which risks public safety and main thing and another sure. thing, it costs a lot of money to do those repairs. Mm-hmm. And you expect when you come home and you turn your stove on that you're going to have gas. I mean, there's a
right.
there's a public
right.
Part of this too.
Sure.
They expect that your stuff's going to work. And so I still see utility companies out there that are installing things without tracer wire, or it's not locatable when they put. And this is 2024. So if I'm
right.
talking about stuff that was installed from the 50s or 60s and they're still fighting to this day, that extra, I mean, for those utilities that are listening, that little extra step is going to save you from here on out.
Well,
the headache.
I'm going to make a note about that because I'm
yeah.
curious now, and maybe we'll come back on another podcast and talk about it a bit further. But I'm actually going to look into that because I know in a lot of industries, the construction side of the house is way different than the locate side of the house.
Yep,
so
sure.
once it's installed, sometimes there's not a communication line between there. So the locators aren't going down to the construction side of the house saying, hey, make sure you put it in there right so I can find it later.
Do you remember going up to, was that St. Joe?
Yeah.
We went up to a water department up there.
Right.
And we were actually doing some locator training.
Sure.
And this guy goes, there's this one spot that we cannot get this water main to locate. And me and Arch were like, sure, let's go out there and find out what's going on.
Sure.
So go out there and hook on the tracer wire. Signal dies at this one spot that he says he can't get to locate. Well, what's sitting there at this spot was a water meter that the construction side of the house had cut and left it. So
yeah,
same company.
Cut their own tracer
wire.
They
cut their own tracer wire.
They made their own product.
Construction side of the house didn't realize, hey, this is a big deal. But
this is a big deal. They thought that's just tracer wire. No
right.
big deal. So, yeah.
So it's
that's good.
Even
that's good
within
stuff.
You know your own company, you need to be talking to the other side of the house and saying, hey, this
sure.
is a big deal to us.
Well, and even when they install things correctly, all right, so we're talking about things that leave gaps, but even when things are installed correctly, we'll use gas as an example right now. They leave their trace wires unbonded mm-hmm. on purpose for cathodic reasons, and that makes sense. But also for cathodic reasons, they will put an anode or an anode spike every 100 feet, 500 feet, things like that. Well, that anode spike is just a ground rod to your current from your locator. So the closest anode may be where all your current wants to go. So it naturally wants to locate better this way to that because you're closer to one than it wants to go that way and all that kind of thing. So even when you solve things correctly, helping your locator now, your technician and operator to understand why does this happen this way is a lot of what we do during our training. The questions that come up, there tend to be the same, you know, kind of 20, 30 questions. And you're like, yep, here we go again. And it's the same folks arriving all at the same questions. And it's funny what you're saying, you know, we're all involved with the CGA and ILR and things like that. And it's something that we've been interested in as a company for a while that, like, we want to put together a presentation that kind of talks about exactly that, you know, and get away from, not get away from locator training, but get into, okay, what can you be doing that's proactive, that's really thinking about what does it take to make a locator successful and protect this stuff on the back end so we've had that conversation. Because most folks, they hear it during our locator training because we go down some avenues and things get into that, and then that's where like, oh, okay, that makes some sense now.
I think it's good. I think we need to explore it because we do locator training. That's almost after the fact. It's already installed. We're teaching them.
Yes.
So we're training them how to locate what's installed. But maybe we need to look at some training on the installation and just remind them that they have to protect it in the future.
And speaking of installation, right. I mean, I've been around a lot of locators, been a locator myself. You know, one of the biggest things is having good utility maps as well. I mean, when you say, like, the better the map, that's a guide. I mean, it's a guide for
Absolutely.
That locator out there. He still has to hook onto that facility and find it. But
yeah.
if he doesn't have good maps and it's saying the gas main's on one side of the road and it's actually on the other, you're setting those guys up for failure.
Right.
So I would say having good maps on insulation and going back on even stuff that you've had in the field for a long time, going back and GPS and that stuff and everything else would certainly help, right?
Oh, absolutely. And not just with your locating. When it comes to that, and there's lots of things around now. You know, we've got the new RD8200SG, which is an RTK cable unit, so we can map as we go and as we locate and all that kind of thing. The mapping side of the house is becoming normal, which you guys already know. You have capabilities through your websites where you can actually have your customer's server talk to your server and overlay their GIS on the polygons so they can see if they even have things in conflict. I know that from having talked to both of you previously about that. So
Jeff, let me interrupt real quick.
Let's
muck it back just a second, what you're saying, because I know what you're saying. I know Nick
yeah.
does, but maybe some of our listeners don't. So what you're saying basically is the technology today will allow you, if you're out there locating, you can actually build a map of your system.
Absolutely.
So that's something that's really key to talk about, especially in the smaller communities where they don't have good maps and they don't know how to get good maps. So if they can locate it and build maps during that process, it's only going to help them in the future, right?
Oh, 100%. And, you know, so I travel around with like KRWA and folks like that.
Kansas Rural Water Association.
Kansas Rural Water Association. Right. And in that, I've learned that in the next 5 to 10 years, about 65% of all water workers will retire. So we've got a situation.
They're taking that knowledge with them when they go.
And they have apprenticeship programs and things like that. And they're trying to do things to help mitigate that situation. But it's a situation that's going to become very real very fast. And part of that is exactly what you said. When those folks leave, they take that knowledge with them. The new guy that comes in doesn't have even a place to start. But if the map is there, especially these new digital maps, right? These aren't like the old, you can print them, of course, and hang them on the wall and all that kind of thing. But the maps now are so dynamic. You can track system valve exercising. You can track leaks. You can track. You can create databases for your damage investigations. You do so many things now with a map that it's an organic living thing. And then every day when you go out and you install something new or reroute something or repair something, you can instantaneously capture all that. And you can do that with a locator kit. And that's it's completely capable of doing that kind of thing now. That you're building something that the next generation, who may not work there as long, maybe it's not going to be there 30 years, but at least the system doesn't suffer with every new hire that comes along. They've got something to begin with and go from there. And that's the way the world's going now. And that's just, that's one kind of more localized example. If we talked about like FusionView, which is going on up in the Minnesota area right now, my boss Travis is part of all that with the Minnesota 811. What they're doing is basically you call in a one-call ticket. Ticket comes through, ticket becomes due in a couple of days, and the GIS data of the member utility is then released to the excavator. So what does that do? Well, that creates a situation where now the utility owner is communicating directly to the excavator for the first time. And even though we have an agent or someone's going to go mark your stuff, nothing's ever going to get, you know, we're not going to lose locators and we're not going to stop locating. That's going to be part of one call law from here until kingdom come. But what it does is now you can go out there and double check if that person puts down, you know, one gas main and two gas services, and they're supposed to be 3 and 3. Yeah, that's a big red flag.
Right.
It's time to call somebody. Yep. So who are you going to call? You're going to call the locators back out and all that. And if you don't get what you need from them, which you should, and most likely you're going to, and all that, now you're going to call the utility company and say, hey, according to your maps, but your provider or your in-house locators only giving me this, you know, I'm trying to get home safe.
There's a discrepancy.
Right, and this is all about damage prevention.
Yeah.
So now they have a way to double check their stuff. And then also, as far as utility companies go, right, if that fellow or lady goes ahead and damages something, what are you going to say? Well, I gave you brake marks, and then I gave you digital tracer wire. And these machines, and we're talking about the new SG unit, it's down to a centimeter.
Right.
So we're less than 6 inches of what we were at, you know, 3 years ago. The technology is becoming so accurate so quickly that now 2 feet either side, I'm getting you down to an inch, down to a centimeter. I mean, what's your reason for hitting me? Because you could put out a string line, you could put out flags, you could put out...
Right.
Yeah, damage prevention is definitely coming a long way.
Oh, it's...
Yeah, and
it's
you mentioned it earlier, in Missouri and Kansas right now, you can, utility companies, you can share your maps with us.
Sure.
And we'll overlay that right over the ticket. Now, currently in Missouri, the excavators can't see it. But you can look at the dig area, the scope of the work versus your utility map, and that way you're not trying to compare two different things. So that's something we offer right now completely free, and we're starting to get some more participation in that, and we've heard a lot of good feedback on it. So,
and so, you know, kind of tying into that same thing, we talked about, obviously, you know, some of the struggles out there you have with the plant, how it's placed, what's out there, the mapping is increasingly getting better and better. It's getting better every day. So I think but we're still going to have real day-to-day issues, right? So,
sure.
So let's talk just a little bit about some of the issues as a locator. I know we could probably sit here for hours and tell funny stories and talk about what's going on, but some of the challenges I see in the field when I stop and talk to locators is obviously the volume's high. We all know that across the entire country. Ticket volumes are going up, especially with the broadband overbuild. You're going to see a lot more tickets coming in, but we're still relying on that frontline damage prevention protector out there. Our locators in the field are vital. So we got to give them the best tools, But we also got to be able to help them when it comes to volume and stuff. So as a locator, I know I used to run into those issues when we got a big build. We had something come in, and I was used to getting maybe 25 or 30 tickets a day, and then I woke up on a Tuesday morning at 70. Yeah, right. We've all been there.
Hell yeah.
And so now you go into panic mode of what you do. So any suggestions from either one of you guys as far as I'm a locator in the field and I'm just getting slammed? I mean, what are some techniques that you guys used to use?
One thing that we use a lot is the worst thing you can take from a locator is time. And I think white lining is probably one of the most underutilized things from excavators. Jeff can probably tell you stories about this too, but I mean, when someone calls in, mark the entire property or mark both sides of the road, you know, those things, we all want the locators to be able to get their job done faster, right? Because where are they going? They're going to their next locate.
Right, we don't create a bottleneck. Sure.
And I've just seen, I mean, real life experiences, how much just putting white paint down saves those guys. And if you want to talk about that a little bit.
I do. Here's my, I'll give you this real quick. As far as white lining goes, the thing that, white lining is always a great idea, and it helps. And a lot of folks do it, and they do it well. But like with anything, you get that the 5% or the 1% that kind of muddy the waters. You can't call in a ticket 2 days ago and it's due at midnight on the third day and show up at 4 o'clock and put down the white paint.
Right.
Yeah, right. That's the one that used to always bite it. Right. Yeah. It completely defeats the purpose. Yes, you had your white paint down.
Right.
But my locator would have been there 2 days ago.
Sure.
And you would have knocked this out in 5 minutes, but now we're still 3 days later, and
that's
it's
a great point.
And right, and now this, you know, they're still trying to get their stuff done, and it's 4 o'clock, and you're like, oh, I'll follow. Well, you need
but
that.
I guess
we need to be working together,
because that's something we try to preach in our damage prevention excavator meetings. You know, and I try to encourage, is like, honestly, the first step you do is you put your white paint on the ground. You literally go out and put white paint on the ground, and as soon as you put that white paint or white flags on the ground, call in your one call ticket.
Sure.
It's sitting there waiting. Yep. You're ready to go. I mean, that's, you know, it's immediate, because if a locator's in the field and he's a block away from you and he receives a ticket on his computer or however he's receiving it, and he knows he's only a block away, even though you just call it in, there's a good chance he's going to run over there and try to mark it out.
Yeah.
You know, save some time. But what you said earlier, the mark entire property, that's a huge issue. And we, you know, I'll be honest with you. I think, honestly, the only people that ever should really use that is landscapers. And I pick on landscapers a lot in my meetings about other stuff. You know, and I got a great relationship in Kansas with all of them out there. But, you know, usually they're landscaping someone's whole yard. They're out there fixing something up. So so you see that. But, however, I do see a ton of mark entire property, and somebody's literally working in a rear easement. All the utilities are in a rear easement. That's where they're putting it. And so now we got locators out front yard, both sides of the street, putting unnecessary paint on the ground. It's wasting their time. I mean, it's kind of hard to say, but you're wasting their time. So if we can narrow that down and encourage people only to call in what they need, what they can work on in a timely manner, and drop that white paint and white flag right where they're working.
Well, I'm going to give an extreme example here, but Jeff can attest, is downtown Kansas City or any of these downtowns, these St. Louis, you know, Wichita, wherever these bigger places are at. What's the difference between them calling in a block in downtown Kansas City, which encompasses the intersections, versus maybe being in the middle of the block?
Oh.
I mean, just explain that.
Tremendous difference. When you hit those intersections, I mean, if we're down there on Baltimore, or we're down next to the Bryant Building or something like that in Kansas City.
Tell them how long it might take to mark one intersection.
It can take hours. It took me one time 2.5 days to mark an intersection and half a block coming off of Baltimore. And people might think that's absolutely insane, but if you've ever seen any of the photos or Google them online of what it's like when these things get opened up, there's a ton of facilities beneath the surface that you just don't see and realize are there.
And you can't just do it halfway, can you?
No.
Protect all of them.
Yes.
So if it's midway down the block and maybe they were setting a street light, what would have been the difference in time there?
Well, what you're going to have at the intersections, you've got things coming in and out, you know, north, south, east, west, if you want to look at it that way. But from intersection to intersection, we've got, you know, basically straight runs with maybe some laterals and things breaking off or a service here and there, but it's a completely different proposition than finding the spider web or you know, the spaghetti that exists underneath these intersections is a completely different proposition.
Yes.
So that helps greatly. Anytime that you can help with the scope of the work and understand this, and maybe what folks need to understand about that is this, when you call in a ticket and you say, well, if Arch is saying that we know we're working in the back easement and we're by the utilities, that doesn't alleviate the liability that locator has, when it says mark entire property, that's a legal document.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's a legal document from 811, so they have to mark the front now. And or have a meet sheet or something like that, and some folks do that, and some folks don't do that as far as people wanting to sign those. But if they won't, you're still in that box, because what will happen is if you call in the entire property, you're going to work in the easement, but then you jump to the front and you hit something, now they're responsible because they were asked to give you an area. So if they go in front of a judge or a jury, which typically don't know the underground industry and things, right? Those folks are going to basically boil it down to one thing. They called in and asked for this scope, and you made a field decision to not give them that scope. Mm-hmm. And we don't care if they were, you know, supposed to put in a mailbox or if they core drilled down to, you know, 100 feet. That's not what it's about. It's about the scope and the area. Had you given them the scope and the area they'd asked for, this would be a completely different understanding. And so that's what I think folks need to understand sometimes. Like, you're putting them in a box. They're stuck with that. Unless you have a conversation, unless you have something that kind of helps remove that burden from them, and now it's what we're talking about is this the
things can cost millions of dollars to fix, so there's a lot of liability on the locator. And for those excavators watching this podcast, you know, we hear a lot from the excavating community about, you know, didn't get locates done on time, all that. There's obviously bad eggs in any industry.
On both sides. Sure.
But I'd say 99% of these locators are out there to try to do a good job. Obviously, there's bad eggs. And today, we're kind of talking about the struggles that locators go through. And here on one of our next few podcasts, we're going to bring in some excavators and kind of get their side of the house, too, of what problems when they don't get locates done on time. That causes them. So just so anybody, any excavators watching, go, hey, you guys are just loving on locators. Yeah. But they do have a lot of liability. Sure. Like you're talking about, if they don't mark what they should mark according to that legal document, I mean, we've all seen things that can run in the millions of dollars. I mean, it's just the fact that it costs a lot to put that stuff back together.
Well, and I'll tell you, when it comes to the scope, I've been in a lot of meetings for a lot of years and been involved in a lot of things. And the number one reason for damages from the locator side is altering the scope and making a field decision to reduce the scope. It just is. It's always the number one thing.
Yep. Or how about that complacency of I'm a hot shot locator. I can tell a quick story.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
That, almost 30 years ago, actually just north of here in Columbia, Missouri, I was hired as a locator, and we were locating the local telephone lines at the time. And I'll be quite honest, I got the job because my dad worked at the phone company, you know, and it was word of mouth. I was a young man, and I had a great opportunity. And about 3 months into it, 4 months into it, I pretty much thought I was the best locator in the entire world.
We've all been there.
I was on fire. I did not have any damages. I wasn't late to any of my tickets. I was building a relationship with all the excavators in the field, the contractors. Everybody thought I was great. Well, I went out just east of town and rolled by a job site, jumped out of my truck, put okay on the ground, the utility flag I was looking for, and left. Because I knew in my head, the entrance of this subdivision was fed from the next entry. I left. The next morning I got a call, and guess who I had to meet on the job site? My dad, and the representative from the company, my boss, and I literally to this day in my office have a picture of the grass that they dug up, and had the utility name and okay with the flag in it, and I was holding it next to a 900 pair copper cable that was coming out of the ground. And so that complacency of thinking, and it humbled me really quick. And what I didn't do is I didn't check my prints. I didn't get out and do any sweeps. I didn't do
visual
any
scan.
No visual scan. So, you know, it's a tough job, but you can let it get away from you. So you constantly got to learn. So I think some of those issues out in the field that the locators have, like you said, sometimes there's bad eggs out there and we have to deal with that. But that continued education for these locators to know more about it, learn more about the utilities, not ever take anything for granted. And I know I've heard you say that even in your training it's not every locate's going to be different.
Yes.
So you have to you got to follow your steps, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the other things out there that are challenges for these locators? I mean, do they ever run into issues with homeowners, animals?
Oh, pets? My. Yeah.
I mean, road conditions, traffic. I mean, it's not just a, you know, walk in the park every day, right?
No, it's not a walk in the park by any stretch. yeah, you're going to deal with homeowners, you're going to deal with lock gates, you're going to deal with things you can't get access to and things like that. Of course, there's going to be the animals and dogs, yeah, and stuff. And I had a locator run up on top of a car, and there was paint all over everything. When I went to the house, this dog stuck his head out the window, and it was like this. It looked like a bear. So it's hard to blame them sometimes for what they've got to do to avoid that whole situation. But sure. No, there's a lot of challenges that go into. You're not just in a static environment. You're out there in the world, right? Sure. And depending upon where some of these locators work too, you know, it can be a very violent area. You got to keep your head on a swivel. You got to know what's going on around you and things, and have a plan in place. I know there are some places like parts of Detroit they've had for years where you have to locate in pairs.
Sure.
There are certain parts of the city you just don't go into alone. It's sure. just a policy,
yeah,
and things like that. So you've got all those factors going on. Then you're trying to do a very technical and skilled job on top of that and pull prints and get things right and understand your tones and all stuff. So damages can happen. Mm-hmm. You know, things that are going to happen. But like back to your story. Number one, I like that you shared that story because we've all been humbled by our damages.
Sure.
I can probably sit here and tell you every at-fault damage I ever had.
Sure.
And one of the ones that I remember was I looked right at it and decided it was out of the scope. I saw it going up the side of the house. I'm like, that won't be in conflict. Instead of getting out of the truck, going back there and guess what I got the next morning, right? And you're like, okay, yep. you, and it pains me because like you looked right at it.
Right.
And decided not to get out of the truck again because you were tired. It was 5:30, 6 o'clock, whatever, you're ready to go home.
Sure.
You know, so, but you want to save. That's what I always tell my team and my crews was, something's going to happen at some point.
Right.
Even my best locator, his name is Jeff, and he's still in downtown Kansas City. And I have seen.
We all know him.
You know which one that is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But as far as on-time performance, quality, and everything, I mean, Jeff always really cared about what he was doing.
Sure.
And even at that, I can remember like it was yesterday, his first at-fault damage. I think he was 8 years into the industry before he had his first at-fault. So he never even thought he was a hot shot, sure. But he was a hot shot. We all knew. We're like, this is the guy, right? But when that happened, it's humbling and it gets you.
Sure.
And I'm like, this is why we do everything we can do in the little ones or the opportunities we have. We're like, okay, pull the print. It's the interest of subdivision. Still pull the print. Still go through all your processes and do your progressions and things.
Right.
Because at some point you'll wish you had that damage back because you're gonna you're gonna have it somewhere else.
Sure,
well, it's just a matter of time. And you made a comment earlier about spray and pray. I think's what you said. That's one thing. If you know locators do need to understand is that you almost need to take pride in your work. You need to make sure whatever.
Oh, not almost. You need to take pride in your work.
And because the paint you're putting down really affects other people. I mean, we've all seen the locators out there that just put more paint on the ground because they think that covers them.
Right.
Well, you're really...
You're setting up the excavator to have a whole lot more work. I mean, you're setting them up for losing
and
time.
And we talked about complacent earlier.
Right.
You know, they keep seeing all this paint and they dig down and they don't ever find anything because there's all this extra paint.
Yeah.
Well, they become complacent then. They go, well, this guy, he just marks a bunch of stuff on the ground. There isn't nothing there. And there's a huge risk there.
Right. And that, you know what, Nick, that kind of segues into something else. So we talked about Jeff downtown. We won't say his last name, but we all know. Great guy. I've seen him work. I've watched him.
If I was going to dig on something, I wanted him to mark. He's that guy.
What kind of relationship does he have with the excavators he works with?
That's good. That's key. That's critical. He has a fantastic relationship with them. Excuse me, you'll have to edit that out. Now, when it comes to Jeff, the communication is key. So I used to tell my teams and all this, and I don't profess to be anybody that's come with anything magical, but if you focus on communication, documentation, and your reputation when it comes to being a locator, you can get very far in this industry, but the communication is number one. But that also needs to be a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
So locators need to get a hold of folks and find out from time to time, what's your scope? Where are you going to be? You know, how deep are you maybe planning to go? What type of excavation are you going to do? I mean, directional drilling versus open trenching can be a very different proposition. Not in the way you're going to mark it, but in the understanding of how you're going to get from A to B can help me understand what's going to help you most on your job site. So having a working relationship with everybody, and I've seen it where, you know, there are locators that try to have no relationship with anyone, and it doesn't go well.
Right.
It makes it a very hard life.
100% with that.
Right.
But then if you're a guy that says, hey, I'm going to show up at this date and this time, and maybe I can't do the whole scope,
sure,
but I can give you 2 or 3 hours. I can give you a block and a half. A lot of excavators are satisfied, and then I'll come back the next day, I'll give you another 2 hours. And as long as you do what you say you're going to do, right, then things go well and all that. But that communication part is huge. So there again, back to white lining. White lining is communication. You're giving us the scope. Or you guys have this capability on both your systems. When you call in a one-call ticket, we can attach as-built prints or a map or a sketch or something about where we're going to go. And a lot of folks don't know that that exists, mm-hmm. Or at least don't take advantage of it and wish they would. To communicate further to that locator, what are we trying to accomplish here and where we're going? Things like that. And also having a meeting. There's nothing wrong with calling somebody, have a meeting, meet on site. And that goes both ways too. One, you can do that as an excavator to understand, you know, want the locator to know what's going to go on here. But then also if you're a locator and you go out and you mark a job site and you think, okay, well, this guy's going to open trench. And based upon what I know about that type of work and what he's putting in, he's going to go down about 4 feet. And I've got a whole bunch of stuff running through here. Now, I'm not going to give him depth. We all know why that is. You know, you're not going to disclose that kind of thing for a litany of reasons. But a lot of my stuff is running at 6 inches or a foot. Maybe I want to talk to that guy about, hey, how do you plan to cross some of this? What are you going to do? Are you going to be back trucking?
Sure.
Are you going to be exposing? Are you going to pothole this stuff? I mean, there's conversation we have, but communication helps both sides with all of it all the time.
Yeah, that depth that's used, you know, that'll never go away. And a lot of that, just so the listeners know, especially when it comes into the contract locating world, it's usually written into the contract that they won't provide depth. And that's always been that way as a locator, even if you're doing it in-house for, as we all know, if you tell somebody it's 3 feet, they're going to use their backhoe for 2.5 feet. And you never know how that's going to work. And the readings, I mean, there could be issues. So you don't want to do that. We want to encourage them to dig down, pothole, look at it, find it, soft dig around it.
And
but I was kind of going with it. Back to the relationship part is, I know that Nick sees this in Missouri as I do in Kansas. You get out into the rural areas and you start talking to the excavators in the community and you ask them how their locates are being performed, all is good. They're like, yeah, they're great. We know them. We know Joe.
Right.
Joe or Sally's our locator. We work with them together. We have that relationship. And I'd like to encourage that more in the larger communities. I mean, get to know people. I know excavators that know Jeff that locate downtown. They know him first name basis. They have his phone number. And believe me, if they think there's a problem that he needs to know about, they're going to pick up the phone and call him versus just, you know, he's involved with their part of their job. How important is it with these, as most of us know, contract locating is huge all across the entire country.
Oh,
there are several, really big companies, really good companies out there that do it. How important is it for the contract locator to have a relationship with the people they're working for?
Oh, it's imperative. It's imperative. And when you say working for, I say that in two different ways. One, you have the utility company that you're contracting.
That's kind of what I would refer
to. Right, so that's number one. But you're also working for the end user.
Yeah, they are working for the end user. But I know that things have changed over the years. I know Nick and I have talked about this in the past. When I first started getting into this business, I had a great working relationship with my customer who was paying me to locate and protect their utility. And I think that's important for all the utilities to understand and know. You know, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't have a good working relationship with your subcontractor marking out, you need to have one. You need to help them because they're protecting your plant. They're protecting your customer. So, you know, unfortunately, I see that sometimes where a utility will wash their hands once they hire that service out and they don't have a good support system to help their locators. And I think that support system is huge.
There are some entities that view, once I've hired this out, it's like buying an insurance policy.
Right.
So I've got my insurance. I'm covered. I've met my obligation through the state and federal statutes that I have to provide locates, and we're good here. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it should ever be viewed that way. I mean, there's been lots of situations with utilities in the past where you just can't get something to tone. You can't find it. You've thrown every trick of the book at it. You've brought in other equipment. You've done everything you can think of. And it's time to call someone in from the actual utility company and say, hey, I've got a trouble locating. I've got a problem here. What can you guys help us with? Well, do you have additional sketches or prints or measurements, or will you send out your vac truck because they own a vac truck and we didn't have one? Things like that. Like, what can we do to try to mitigate things? Because I don't want a damage to happen and then get them re-involved. So having that kind of relationship to go back and forth, that's imperative to success. The other thing is when you're dealing with locate companies, contract locate companies, or even like your own in-house stuff, is understanding where you're planning to go. You brought up fiber builds and everything that's going on this year. I mean, I think Missouri's getting $1.7 billion and Kansas getting $990 million this year. That's a lot. And I just drove through Kansas, and middle of nowhere, there are trenchers and reels and things. It's happening. It's not if it's happening. It's happening. I've seen it with my own eyes.
All right, absolutely, Jeff. We know this overbuild's coming. It's very important for all of us to be aware of it, get involved. There's opportunities. There's different councils, different meetings. It's being worked on from all directions. But the key is that communication, obviously, to be
that kind of keeps coming up.
Yeah, to be in the know about this stuff's coming, because it's coming. Like you said, you've seen the stuff across the states. So all the small communities are listening to this. It's coming through your area. So be prepared. All the contract locating companies out there, you know it's coming. Ramp up, start staffing now if you haven't already.
Yep.
And it is coming. So.
Well, and then so everyone knows too, there's local CGA meetings and things that take place on the Missouri side, and then there's Cannabis Damage Prevention Council has three different chapters.
And explain to people, they're just getting all stakeholders together, right?
Yeah. So it's just an opportunity to know. Just being a know, be involved. It's not something that's going to take a lot of your time. It's just other than you're gaining
knowledge. And this is once a month, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, guys, this has been a great first podcast. Jeff, thank you for coming.
Cheers.
No, really appreciate it. It's been an awesome conversation. I hope everybody out there likes it.
Yeah, we look forward to having you on again in the very near future, because I know you have a lot of knowledge about other stuff than not just locating.
So. Baseball cards.
Yeah, baseball cards. We'll have you back on.
I thought it was going to be a baseball card podcast.
Yeah, sorry, man. We misled you a little bit. So, I appreciate you having me.
Great, thank you. Nick. Yeah, it's been great. And we're going to try to keep coming out with these more frequently. And hopefully we can have some good guests on, just like Jeff. So.
Yeah, and actually, those listeners out there, let us know. You can reach out to Nick or I, or even Jeff. Let us know.
If you'd want to be a part of one,
or if you want to hear a certain topic discussed, or if we can, that'll help us build future podcasts and invite guests in. And so reach out to us. You can contact Kansas 811. My contact's on that website. Nick's on the War
1-3-811. Yep.
So reach out to us.
All right. Well, thank you guys.
Thank you all for having me.
Well, that's it. Arch, do you have any final words?
No, I just want to say thank you for joining today. Appreciate your time. Hope you got a little knowledge out of it, had a little fun. See you next time.
See you next time.